Welcome to another episode of Hustle Hard, the podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Witt, and I believe that success should be earned and not given. And if you do too, but you're currently underachieving personally or professionally, for one reason or another, then the athletes, entertainers, and fitness experts I interview can motivate you today to do more tomorrow, because they've dedicated their lives day after day and year after year to achieving their goals. So be inspired, take their behaviours and apply their principles to improve your life, physically, mentally, at home or at work. Joining me today, a former French international striker and World Cup finalist, a Man United cult hero and two-time Premier League winner, who these days is loving life as an entrepreneur after retiring over 10 years ago following a hugely successful yet injury-prone career. Bonjour, Louis Saha, joining me all the way from the south of France. Welcome to the show. How are you, mate?
Very good, and yourself?
Very well, thank you, mate. Even better for seeing you this morning. How's life in France treating you?
Very well, I think. I'm a privileged one, let's say. Got the sun, got a lovely daughter, 5 months old. So, yeah, life is treating me really well. And France is a great country. Sometimes we're facing a bit of difficulties. Yes, we're playing good in football. So that's a good start. But, lovely food, lovely beach. It's like nice places to live, really.
I imagine the south of France is a bit more relaxed than Manchester and Liverpool city centres.
maybe not. It does provide different vibes. Definitely Manchester is a great town. I love London as well. So, yes, you can't have it all, you know. So the weather, for sure, I will pick south of France. There is no doubt about it.
I mean, I just mentioned a bit more relaxed, but you also mentioned baby daughter, Taylor, 5 months old now. So how's fatherhood treating you this time round? Because you're looking quite fresh this morning. So I'm assuming, and I'm hoping you're not having too many sleepless nights.
It is the case, but to be honest, it's more the wife is struggling. that's the beauty to be a man, to be honest, we're lucky one. That's a joy that I have. It's really to enjoy. It's in my age, I'm 45, and to experience that, it's just a privilege. I have no words to describe. I'm just like very happy that. But obviously, it comes with difficulties. Some short nights. Some moment of challenge, but that's part of the life that I really enjoy and sign for.
Yeah, I suppose you're obviously busy now with your entrepreneurial duties. So have you managing to find that family and work-life balance is going okay so far?
Yeah, that's a tough thing. But as I organize really well, the fact that my priority is my family always been, but it's how I can balance it and making sure that I can still have success on the other end. So business and let's say networking, like find the time to always learn something. So I do think that I'm not too bad in that regard, but it's always hard because I'm a very passionate guy. So it's really hard to get 100% on both sides. So sometimes you have to pick your fight, but that's part of it. So sometimes you have to travel and not be with your family. That's part of it. You know, you can't have it all. That's the challenge that life is always giving you on the table. So you have to enjoy it. I enjoy the challenges. I enjoy the frustration as well, because it's part of being alive, and that's good for me. So my ventures in some way, it's another way to deliver my passion, my energy, my positivity. Sometimes things come good, and sometimes it's a bit longer or harder, but that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, when you retire from professional football, I imagine there's a big void to fill, isn't there? You've obviously done that with Axis Stars. Have you exceeded all expectations you had for the company yet, or do you think they've still got a lot of work to be done?
Oh, yes, a lot of work to be done, but I don't think that there is any way that you're going to stop there and say, oh, yes, you have done it all. You have always to look for better and quicker and more efficient. So that's the thing I'm looking for. Definitely at that time, where it's been more than 5 years that we're working on this project, I have like a bit of frustration and a bit of really like successful, you know, like things that we have done. I'm very proud of it. It's tough, and I never expected to be easy. That's the beauty to do something that you really care about. And I really thought that basically starting to see that there is so many profiles that find it really hard to get to the transition part, admit that they have to find something else, admit that they don't have all the skills for that. It's not easy. So we have to change the mindset, and, you know, like changing any mindset, any place from comfort zone to kind of like learning zone or let's say different kind of openings. It's always a difficulty. So that's the mission that I am very dedicated to. So I really enjoy this, and I, to be honest, I really always look some barriers as an opportunity. It's like, oh, okay, that's not easy, that's not helpful. I take it as a good challenge, and it shows that basically there is a lot of things to be done in that regard. So helping athletes and artists in some way to realize that they have other people doing things differently and succeed. It means that pretty much like you can have like different worlds, but you have to, you know, have the courage to do something different than what you are doing at the moment. That's something that we try to really highlight and bring the awareness of the parents or the people around those guys. There is like so many things to change in terms of setting. So I'm very, very passionate about that.
I mean, just for listeners who aren't aware what you're up to these days, you founded Axis Stars to give back essentially and help pro athletes and artists, as you say, manage their careers. We see so many current and former players, don't we, who have struggled during the careers and after the careers, sometimes because they've been badly advised or taken advantage of. And this is where you come in, isn't it? To help keep the sharks at bay. Is that the right phrase?
It is. The situation comes from a personal situation. So come about like the moment where you have to take decision. Obviously, you don't know everything. You are very focused on your career. And that's basically the case of every athlete. You have to be very, very committed, 100% focused on kicking the ball or throwing the all commitment to your body is full on. So your head is really giving you small space of time to actually consider anything else. So that's why I think agents or the people around you are very, very important. And sometimes you make mistakes about picking those guys. So some are taking the opportunity to be very transactional and take the advantage of you because you're not aware, you're not willing to be aware. You don't want to get your hand dirty or get the hard work. As I said, you stay in your comfort zone because the comfort is to really focus on one thing. Like for everybody, you will make this easy choice if you have the opportunity. So what we're trying to do is to create an environment where it's a bit safer, where the people around you is going to be really like looking for your long future.
We are obviously seeing more and more money pumped into it on and off the pitch every year. I mean, like millions and millions and millions, aren't we? Endorsements, brand deals, et cetera, whatever. Have you noticed any difference in how the business of football operates since you started your company? Like, are things better or worse given there's more money to be made than ever before?
I think it's difficult. There is a balance. Yeah, definitely when you have like more, let's say, capacity to do things, it's always better. So money is a problem when it gets too much control. It's basically only for that. So obviously players who have passion for a game will start to be commodities. They're going to start to be, you know, product in some way. And this is wrong. So you will have to find a balance. And this is what I think has been very aggressive the last 10 years. Sorry. It's all about like, oh, how I can like get more views or get more, let's say, commercial deals, all this like make a very competitive and but very aggressive clubs approach. Even like you talk about like FIFA or UEFA, their approaches is like, oh, how I can get a kind of like a very strong competition between other sports or other organizations. So that's why Super Leagues arrived. And it's all about like competition, how I can make more money. If you bring money in the game or too much in the game, it's dangerous. I don't have the solution yet. I really hope that people realize that. I'm not the only one who's saying those things, but it's about finding the right balance. And if you give too much power to people who only are driving by money and ROI and all those things, it's not going to make sense for long.
You mentioned giving power to the wrong people there. Given the money involved in the game now, players now are becoming the brand themselves, yeah, aren't they? The player is the brand now. Is that becoming an issue more? Because sometimes the player's ego takes over because they are such a big brand themselves. Are we seeing players sometimes think they're bigger than the club or anything like that?
Yeah, you have like maybe a few players. Let's say in the world you have like, you know, big brands, and the biggest one you can mention is Cristiano and maybe Kylian Mbappe in itself, especially in France. He has changed a lot of things. I think they signed a new deal, the Federation of Football, French football, where in terms of commercial aspect and deals, I think they have established a new chart. So this is the thing that, yes, there is a balance you need to find. Those players need to be formatted in how to preserve those morals or those, let's say, equity in terms of values. Because if you give too much power to some individuals, it's even worse than an institution. But, you know, institutions sometimes, they just like, you know, take their rules, and they are almost able to auto-police. So basically they're saying we try to regulate things, and they are the ones who are creating their own police, you know. So they're saying, oh, yes, we have checked ourselves and we're going to manage it. So we've seen it with FIFA. We've seen it with UEFA. Those guys are self-policing themselves, and that's not right. So there is like elements we try to bring where players say, okay, hang on a minute. I'm not going to be able to decide my own brand. I'm not going to decide how he affect myself. So that's why those guys say, listen, if you are taking those rules and just decide for myself, I'm going to take over as well, because those guys know their brand. They know they are more followed than even clubs. So this is the reason. When you get a fight in terms of commercial and there is no morals, this is where, you know, it's like we call Coubertin. We say it's the law of sport, you know. It's like, okay, I want to be bigger than you, and then you let the ego talks, and this is wrong.
Given your expertise looking after players and what you do now, what's going on with Marcus Rashford? Obviously, former United player, you might have some insider knowledge, I don't know. But from the outside looking in, to me, he clearly seems like he isn't himself. We've seen the problems off the pitch. His form on the pitch hasn't been great. I'm just thinking, could his form and behaviour be something unrelated to football that we don't know about in terms of how his career is being managed?
That's for sure, that any individual who is playing at the highest level is always a night side things who can disrupt things. You know, confidence-wise, we are very fragile sometimes. You could be unstable by the talks that you can hear in the press or by the environment of a stadium. You hear things. It affects you. You can't be a robot. So it does provide a bit of disturbance in that regard. But obviously, he's a huge professional. He's committed to the club. He's committed to his country. There is a lot of like things that he wants to play for. That's for sure. That's not an easy task because he started so young. There is an element that nobody can teach Marcus Rashford to be the best version of Marcus Rashford, because nobody has been there before. So I remember a documentary about Nicola Anelka. Nicola is the same. You know, you can't teach Nicola Anelka how to be Nicola Anelka. So it's a difficult one where those guys need to give them the credit for being themselves and being authentic. But they're going to make mistakes. They're going to improve along the way. And that's not easy for finding the right balance. But yes, you can see clearly that he's got too much potential too wasted in, let's say, in parties and things that goes in the press outside his game. You know, there is so many elements in his game we see that he can improve. For me, he's the best player. So this comes with extra pressure, comes with extra responsibilities. You can't do things normally like any other players on this squad. This is not working, you know, especially if you're local boys. You know, it's not the same. So it would be asked a lot things that he thinks that it's extra and necessary. But in this era of our game, you have to consider doing it because people are just full of scrutiny of everything you do. And with the magnitude of Man United, just throwing this name and Marcus Rashford, it brings a lot of attention and people just jump on the wagon to actually be, you know, to be heard, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it must be so much more difficult for him being a local boy, but you know how it feels when you're playing at Manchester United and some of the criticism that you have to deal with being at the club, because I would imagine the pressure is absolutely immense. And he is still a young lad as well. I just feel like he like needs an arm around him and someone to tell him how good he is, because he just looks so low on confidence and his body language and everything looks off. We know he's got it in him because he scored over 30 last season, didn't he? I just get the impression though that Ten Hag, that isn't Ten Hag's style, as someone who's going to put his arm around him and tell him he loves him. Do you know what I mean? What's your thoughts on the manager and United season so far?
I think it's as like any, let's say, human beings and any manager or any owner, you make mistakes. You know, along the way, you will have to understand that that's part of it. Sometimes you make the right choice, sometimes not. Sometimes on the way you manage people, you say the wrong words. You may say the right things, but you say you use the wrong words. So this is definitely something that hasn't maybe worked out as much for some players. I'm not saying the tactic. I'm not saying about the way you talk to people. It's just a combination of things, you know, like nothing has been fully in place for maybe the manager to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. What you have, like you make mistakes maybe on the way you bring players in. So then those kind of expression that maybe a player like Marcus Rashford will actually express won't be there because the quality of players around him are not as good, or the kind of leadership is not as good. So you have to do things that he's not good at. And this is a problem. So that's what I'm saying. It's just like you can speak rightly about some advice and say, okay, the right words and something like this, but the combination of things is not in place. So the infrastructure was not in place. So basically we didn't have a director. So may say, oh yes, it's a lot of excuses, but it's real. When you don't know who is going to be the next manager or the next whatever, or sport director, who's going to really take decision, you know, this aspect, maybe it goes down to the very core of the players and they don't even know it. It's a reality. So you have like maybe 5 or 6 years now not having that in place, like manager after managers. It does provide a lot of pressure on one or two players.
You think Ten Hag will be there next year?
I think so. I think, he has proved in some ways that he's a good manager. And also he has proved that he's a manager who has potential. So if he's finding the right, let's say, formula, getting a team that doesn't get injured as much, some players as missing out, it was difficult to respond to that without showing that, oh, yes, you're trying to find so many excuses. But it's reality. Those guys were injured. Martinez is a big player. Varane was a big player. So this defense hasn't worked out really well. Creative midfielders, they had issues at some point with Sancho. They have issues with Anthony. All those players were, let's say, as good as they could be with confidence and all that. But when you let's say, gamble on Mason Mount and it hasn't worked out at all. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult one. So as I said, like, oh, yes, now it put a lot of pressure on Marcus or Bruno Fernandes because all of those players that we mentioned hasn't performed as much. And this is quite difficult. If those guys were there, Marcus or other players, like maybe Anthony, whoever, will have performed better, who knows. And that's not excuses, but that's the reality.
I mean, to be fair to Ten Hag, he's had to deal with a lot, hasn't he? You mentioned Sancho. Mm-hmm. Rashford's obviously problems, Anthony's problems, even Ronaldo last year, and there's been a lot of calls all season from fans and stuff to get rid of him, hasn't there? And they've still stuck by him, so I think he'll be there next season too. But anyway, moving on from United, big summer coming up, the Euros. What's the current feeling surrounding the French national team back home? Are you confident you're going to win this year?
Confidence, because those guys are really good. Even they didn't, let's say, perform against Germany. Germany has surprised them, and it was a tough game. But you can see the quality of this French squad. It's frightening, you know. The more you look at it, those guys dominate games in a way that I haven't seen that much before. So it's really strong. So yes, for me, they are one of the favorites. They are definitely England around the corner. There is all the big experienced teams. You always look at Germany, Italy, those like nations always come because Euros is about how to manage those few games. It's not like a World Cup. Mm-hmm. You have like definitely that aspect is very, very important. How you start the tournament, how you finish it, how you know how to maintain the quality of the European football. It's a specific tournament. We know that France and England will be around there.
I mean, the French, they just keep churning out these world-class players. Like your defence and your midfield is already sorted now for the next 10, 15 years, isn't it? You've got Saliba, you've got Tchouaméni, Camavinga coming through. Who would your front three be to start this summer?
Oh, it's a difficult one because I'm a big fan of Giroud. You see how many goals that he managed to play, especially in tight games where you don't feel like you can use the speed of our wingers or the Coman, the Dembélé and the Kylian. So you have Griezmann with a kind of a false number 9, number 10. There is like so much combination on the very top, and you have, like as you mentioned, a very strong defense and midfielders who seems to really facilitate the way Didier Deschamps want to set up whatever, like the tactic. There is sometimes lack of inspiration. It does happen. He rely a lot on Kylian Mbappé, let's say creativity sometimes. But this is why those guys are very solid. You can predict pretty much like they will come back in games because they have that tendency of like slowing down the pace and at some point reaccelerate. They have a as I said, like whoever like those guys come out of the bench, you know, Colomwani. It's difficult to give a front three at the moment. There is goals to find in experienced players. So I like Griezmann, composure. Obviously, Kylian will play, that's for sure. There is no doubt about it. The front three. And to be honest, I never like to do that, where give my opinion, because I was playing as well. And, you know, it's a difficult one. Those guys are terrific guys and deserve to play. But I don't think that they will play the same front three all the tournament. So it's going to be a tournament that you have to adapt, because there is teams who have to be played differently. So it's a big job.
Well, they're not short of options, are they, up front? Let's be serious.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
just like in your playing days, anyway. Mm-hmm. Speaking of your playing days, you played in the Euros, you played in the World Cup. What has given you more satisfaction, your playing career or your life now as an entrepreneur?
Oh, to be honest, it's a great question. You know, I love what I'm doing. It's very unique, and I'm very proud. So basically, I'm privileged when I, as a football player, to done what I've done. It's great. I really consider that as a privilege. But I'm saying that by far, I'm more proud in what I'm doing, because that's not easy. First, in no way to compare. It's not that, but it's saying that's not as natural. Definitely not natural. Business and being an entrepreneur, working and be a salesman of your venture, that's different. So where I felt that it was kind of a natural thing to do. Football is my passion. I really like to challenge everybody on the field. So I loved it. It's different. But there is like, okay, there is a statue quo. There is a thing that you don't like. You want to change things. So I'm way more proud to what I'm doing. And I really want to have an impact and leave a legacy, because there is so much those guys can do if they are well equipped. It could be an enormous potential, but at this moment in time, it's a bit shut up and play, you know, where those guys are asked to be brands or ambassadors or whatever, where they can be so much more inspiration for the youth, for the next generation. The world is completely upside down at the moment, and I don't ask them to be politicians, but they can do way much more if they were equipped, if they are trusted, if they had the confidence to do things. Cristiano Ronaldo is a big ambassador for sports, for nutrition, for the way you stay fit, and there are so many kids who are obese at the moment, and that's not right. So having those guys able to speak out and deliver a better message, they have more, way more to offer than politicians. Those guys are, I would say, bullshitters.
I completely agree. I mean, I'd much rather listen to someone like Ronaldo, who is a positive role model, isn't he, than some bullshit, like you say, that comes out of a politician's mouth, for sure. You won Premier Leagues. You played hundreds of games in the Premier League. You scored in both domestic cup finals. I loved you as a player. I saw you when you first come over to the Premiership, playing for Newcastle at Nottingham Forest in 1999. Mm-hmm. And then I was also at Old Trafford for the first ever time for your debut against Southampton when you scored the free kick. I loved you as a player, like I say, but I always thought your all-round game was underrated, like the way you brought others into play and your link-up play. I feel like you never got the credit you deserved for it. And then when you was fit and firing on all cylinders as well, there wasn't many strikers better in my eyes, but I always look back on your career and think it could have been so much more if you could just stay fit. Is that how you feel? Do you feel unfulfilled?
Yes, you can say that. You know, my struggle during my career is all about my injuries. I never felt that in my game I was struggling. When I was on this field, I was creating something. I was like a trouble, and this is my game plan. It was my game plan. I didn't want to come out of any game where a defender would say, oh, yes, I had an easy ride there. No. I wanted to challenge. If it's not my day technically, I will challenge you physically. I will try to do whatever to win headers. I will try to create disturbance. That was my philosophy. So I felt frustrated because when physically I couldn't do that, I was like rock bottom. And basically, I had so many that I had to come back to a certain level, I couldn't really improve. You know, I have like a foundation of like maybe 2 or 3 years and feel like, you know, I'm progressing and then I feel more confident and I can get under my belt this kind of experience. I didn't felt this since I joined United. I'm starting to have like my Achilles problems. So basically jumping starting to be a problem for me. Then, you know, when you do all this compensation, you create things in your knees and my thighs. So it was really hard. So, yes, I feel frustrated, especially trying to come back to my international career. I started in 2004 with the Euros, the year I joined United. And then I finished, it was 2013. So I managed to have like a big chunk of years at the level of national team, but I barely had 1 to 2 years without injuries. So I'm saying it's like, okay, I had to always come back, mentally be strong and try to catch up. You know, like you mentioned that the generation that I was with Djibril Cissé, Wiltord, Thierry Henry, Trezeguet, you name them, it's like, it was crazy. So this was like really, really tough mentally, to be always criticized about my injuries, not about my game. So obviously this is why I didn't get the credit, because I couldn't maintain that kind of level.
I mean, it must be tough when you are watching from the sideline, because essentially you are physically unable to do your job. Mm. And that must come with another set of problems in terms of you're going to be in the treatment room, so you're going to be isolated from all your colleagues, and you're going to feel left out, and it could affect how you feel at home. And when it's constantly these setbacks that you experience, it must be extremely difficult.
I can say it was a nightmare mentally. I am strong because I always think that I'm privileged. As I said, that's the word. You know, I'm saying, okay, there is like 3 billion people who would be very happy to be in my place, in the bench, in the trading room, being a professional. So I can't complain. So it's like I stay in my zone where I'm complaining only a few hours. And then I take the sun, I take the smile of my children and move on. So that was my philosophy. So I was strong in that regard. But yes, it was really hard as a competitor. I wanted to play. I wanted to destroy my defenders and see my, let's say, internal competition. Let's say the other players from my team playing instead of me was really hard. I could see them progress. And I say, okay, how I can still progress? My only way to progress in that time in the treatment room, it was about my game and say, okay, those guys are not doing this. Those guys are not doing that. I should be doing more of those. And this is the way I was trying to progress. So I remember all those hours in a gym where with Rio Ferdinand or Solskjaer, I was doing 2 or 3 hours gym work, you know, like really trying to catch up in some way. And when I come back, I'm almost like when I left, you know, it was like that obsession. You know, I was like really, really hard worker on that. And now the things that happened to me, I just had an operation 2 months ago, maybe a bit more, but 2 months ago, my meniscus is gone. My cartilage are gone on two knees. I've got, I can't play with my children, you know? So I know I give it all. I give 200% to my clubs because I never cheated. So some fans have said, oh yes, this is in mind and you don't want to risk whatever and all that. Nobody, not even the managers, are there with me today. Helping me and trying to solve my situation in terms of like my fitness. I can't play with my kids as much. I want to beat them every day. I can't. So this is the reality that I was in, you know, and I feel proud that at least I give it all and have, let's say, a proof of that. You know, my condition today is not like I'm doing like, I don't know, like 3-4 hours gym every day because I can't do it. My knee will swell as much they were doing when I was playing. So I have absolutely zero regrets. Yes, I have frustration. But I have no regrets.
Injuries aside, I'll come back to that in a minute. But I just want to speak about your introduction to the Premier League. Obviously, you had the little taster when you went to Newcastle all those years ago in 1999. Went back to France and then you've obviously gone to Fulham. And you had an amazing season, Championship, Golden Boot, promotion to the Premier League. And I was, you know, I can remember watching Fulham that season and I thought, oh, they're going to do well. Sahar's going to bang in the goals. And I thought he was going to hit the ground running in the Premier League. New kids on the block. Your confidence must have been through the roof because of the 30 goals in the Championship. And you got off to an absolute flyer, didn't you? At Old Trafford, you scored 2. I remember being sat in the pub at the start of that season in 2001, watching you score 2, and Van Nistelrooy got 2 as well, didn't he, on his debut for Man U. But that was really as good as it got for you in your first 2 full Premier League seasons at Fulham. The goals that kind of dried up, didn't they? I think you only scored like 13 in those first 2 seasons. How do you remember those early Premier League days when you're not scoring much? Is it confidence thing? Was it the way Fulham played, or is it because you're still a young man in a new country, learning your craft?
A bit of everything you just mentioned. To be totally honest, I think that I had like an injury, let's say 2 months after this great day where I scored 2 goals. So then there is another player coming. It was Steve Marley. The manager starting to challenge me a little bit with him. So I didn't take it really well in some ways because I felt like I had my style and it was a bit of a difficult one for me. So those are elements during a promotion year where the clubs as well try to find his feet in the Premier League, it's tough. You know, the Championship, it was a different league. You know, it's okay, you establish a style of play and all that, but we recognize then, oh, hang on a minute. Those Liverpools, those Manchester, those are
big step up in it.
Big step up. So we had that style. It was good, but we were not clinical enough. So basically, defensively or offensively, it was just that edge. So it's starting to be a bit harder. Yes, you have this element of surprise when you start. People don't know you as much, and then they start to learn your game. And they get around things, and that happens to every team. So I do think that we've done well to maintain our place in the Premier League for the three years I was there. So with Coleman, we managed to do that. But yes, obviously it was difficult to find the right balance between attacking the way we wanted to attack and defend. And sometimes when we are not clinical enough in front of the goal, we were conceding goals and all that. So it was a bit of a tough step up, but I think it was great. I loved it. The Premier League was the place I wanted to be. I really managed my career in that sense. I wanted to improve. So that's why the project of Tigana was great, because he said, oh, I was playing winger when I started my career. And definitely when I joined Fulham, I said to the manager, I want to play striker as I play for the under 21. So for France, this is my position. I don't want to play on the wing and running for other people. I wanted to play striker. And this was okay. The first year in the Championship was where that I really learned how to actually impose my game. Mm-hmm. And the Premier League was a step up. And I think that my quality was great for it, because I had pace and I couldn't control the ball and do my own chances in some way. But I faced tough opposition. You know, I always like remember those games against United and Chelsea in particular. It was where I really understood that I had to step up as well as a player. And I loved it.
Well, step up, you certainly did in 03, 04, because you've obviously found your feet now, haven't you? And the hard work's obviously paid off. And this was, for me, your best season. I mean, you was absolutely electric for that first half of the season at Fulham. And United have come calling. You've got the dream move to Man U in the January, haven't you? When did you find out that Sir Alex first wanted you? And I imagine it didn't take you much convincing to sign.
No, that's true. It was a few years before. When I say a few years, it's I starting to play against United in Cup, League Cup and all that. And I remember Michael Sylvestre coming to me and say, oh, yes, we're speaking about you. When you're joining and all that. So I knew that they were interested. And maybe I would say 5 months before I signed, the manager itself called me and say, oh, yes, I'm very interested to have you with us. Your style is what we're looking for. So all those things, all those words coming from the legend, Sir Alex Ferguson, was amazing to hear. I understood that basically I had that confidence. I had that naivety as well, because I'm kind of a relaxed guy. Mm. I was up for the challenge, but not up for the challenge in a way that just like I was so curious. I just wanted to actually compete with the best players and all that. So it was just something that I was looking for all my life. In so many ways, I haven't pictured this privilege as much at this moment. When you speak to the manager, I still felt that it was a dream. I needed to be on that field, sign the contract to really realize. And my first session in training was, which is the best.
You just said then you knew like 5 months before Sir Alex was on the phone to you. Is that all allowed? Is that ethical, shall we say? Do they not have to go to the club first to register interest? Or can he just get in touch with you and say, Louis, I'd love you at United? Do you know what I mean? Like, how does it work?
It works in a way that there were discussions before, so they should have like settled these things before, if I remember well. And that's where the actual, let's say, controversy happens. You know, it's because like the deals was like already settled before, and they didn't manage to agreed to the price. And then when I started this year, the price increased, and that's where I was not happy, because they give their words, Shunam, and obviously things in terms of like business just escalates to the point where I had to do things to say, yes, I won't sign a new contract and stuff like this, because it was unfair. You give your words, and it didn't happen correctly. But those things happen in a game. So I was like, absolutely no problem with Fulham. They played the cards, and I had to play mine because I wanted to have this trajectory. But yes, I think there is some moment where clubs have to behave in a certain way. But I think that nothing happened in that regard.
Gone to United, settled in well, didn't you? Just maintained that amazing form for the rest of the season. Then the injuries problems started, didn't they? 2004, 2005, 05, 06. Did you ever worry that your United career was on the line during those rough couple of years? Because, you know, you're on a big contract. Is there ever a chance of you thinking that you're struggling mentally because you can't play? But then you're also thinking, oh my God, if I don't get fit, they're gonna get rid of me. They're gonna not renew my contract. It must be a tough time, not just because you can't play, but because of everything else as well.
No, that's totally normal, and it's not like you have a fixed contract or something that you know, you're working in a company. In France, at least, you can't be sacked this way. But in football, if you don't play well for 6 months, you're out of the door in some way. It's not like basketball, maybe, in the NBA, where you get drafted straight away. But you're not going to stay in an environment where you don't feel wanted anymore. So you have to find another suitor. Those things happen. I was confident enough that if I come back fit, if I, let's say, have my last injury, I can do damage. I knew about my quality. I knew about the way I want to approach games with a smart way, because I know I can't do this, I can't do that, but I can do this very well. I was trying to improve every day, had the right mentality. And I think that's why I think Suarez Ferguson recognized that. I wasn't hiding in any way. I banged on his door one day where I get another injury, and I say, I want to start from the very bottom. I want to play with the boys, and pick me only if I'm really good. You know, don't pick me because I'm with whatever I scored. And he said, Louis, forget about this. You're part of the plan. I love you as a player. I love you as a guy. You're going to come back and be part of the things. And those words really stay. And this is why I love United so much. You know, it's because these guys, when he give you your trust, it just like make you realize how important you are. And you could be a young guy for 17 years old, or it will respect you. If you feel like you have the right mentality, you are part of his army. So it's great approach if you go about your career, because if you have your mentor is that kind of stable mentally, understand that you need confidence, you need support, especially when things are not going well. You can't go anywhere. And the same where he was asking confidence, he was asking courage, especially things were not going well on the pitch. It doesn't care if we win 3-0 or something like this and you score a fourth. It doesn't care. He say, okay, it's good, but I would like you to score an equalizer or something like this. You know, it's better for the squad, for my team. So this is the stuff I really implemented in my life then, because I think this is the way I want to be remembered. Someone who supports, someone who gives the right platform for people. And so Alex Ferguson was my kind of mentor, ambassador for that.
You found some form, didn't you? And again, because of perhaps Sir Alex and how he was treating you and stuff, but 05, 06 and 06, 07, you were scoring goals again, and you're obviously winning trophies. So I'm assuming this was, you look back on this time of your career as an amazing time. And I remember the time when you was keeping Van Nistelrooy out the side. He was obviously a monster in front of goal, an absolute goal scoring machine. Was it your form, or was it Ruud's relationship with the manager? Why you were playing?
No. Definitely Ruud's relationship with the manager. Ruud is the best striker I've seen. Period. You know, he's a killer up front of goals, and what he has shown to the public I think he's almost 80%. Because in training pitch, the guy could score 15 goals, you know, in training pitch, where his small goals like this. No, this guy was a monster. But I was different. My game was allowing maybe Cristiano to improve, maybe Waza to improve. I was a bit of like the guy who was able to maybe link play better than Root, where he has to finish. He has to be the end game plan. You know, that's not me. I was able to bring those players in a bit more maybe, and that's it. So different qualities, not mean that I'm better, and that's not going to come out from my mouth, because I'm not. It's an enormous player, but his relationship has provided maybe another solution. We were playing at two in front sometimes, and it was working well. I think that, yeah, I maybe proved the point, because I was doing well, and Cristiano was starting to score 25 goals or 30 goals, and Waza was doing the same, and I was able to score my 15 goals in some way. So this strike force has a better balance maybe than just Ruud van Nistelrooy scoring 30 goals and maybe others the 5 and 8 goals. You know, that's a bit of calculation that the manager has done, and it worked out. But I won't take the credit for Van Nistelrooy's departure. I think he recognized that he made maybe a mistake the way he talked to the manager, because the manager is the boss. He wasn't happy. That's it. you're gonna be on your way, and that's what happened. But I think he's done really well after.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been a big confidence boost for you either way when you're starting in front of Ruud van Nistelrooy. But I mentioned your all-round game earlier. Your all-round game was a lot better than his, because he's similar to Haaland, isn't he? He's just purely all about goals. So I can see.
I'm not so agree with this. I mean, that's what I said. We have seen 80%. But I'm telling you, Ruud, he could have done more in terms of like link play. He's unbelievable player. But because he's so obsessed in front of the goal, he wanted to be in front of the goal. So he won't go any wide areas for showing that he has skills. He had skills, you know. He can do it. But he's a monster in front of goals. And this is what his real quality was. He's able to actually concentrate and do the right things, because he's going to score 30, 40 goals a season. And this is amazing. Amazing skills.
Yeah, I mean, he went to Madrid, didn't he, after that, and then won the Golden Boot in Spain in his first season. So there was the quality was still there. It was just, like you say, the relationship with the manager. But so he's gone to Madrid. Then you're now playing alongside a maturing Ronaldo and Rooney, and Tevez has been brought in as well. That for me was one of the best trios, front trios we've ever seen. What was it like for you playing and training with these guys every day?
Privilege. That's my word. I loved it, because the guy that is next to you, left, right, center, top players. I mean, like top professionals, top players, the top attitude, top competitors. I mean, like you feel it. If you sleep, you're out. So you have to work out. You have to show that you're working out. You have to really prove your point every weekend, because those guys don't sleep. So they don't rest. They don't just contemplate and say, oh, yes, I've done this, I've done that. They just want more. So when you have a Cristiano that's basically work the way he work, and he's 3 or 4, maybe, no, what I'm saying, like almost 10 years younger than you, you say, hang on a minute. Whoa. You have a Wayne Rooney that just arrived. He's 18, barely 18, the guy, and he's playing as mature as someone who is 30, 35. Mm-hmm. Hang on a minute. Whoa. You have like Carlos Tevez. You have Alan Smith. If you have Solskjaer, who has like win the Champions League for United, I'm telling you, if you blink an eye, you're out of this squad. You know, it's as fast as that. So it's great. I loved it. I felt like I could compete with those guys. I had my place. I didn't feel like I was on the bench every weekend. I felt like I could, if I was fit, bring some solutions. So I was part of the squad. I was part of this Sir Alex Ferguson team, and I was very proud, very... I was a competitor. I didn't want to be on the bench. I didn't sit there and be happy by winning trophies, just being part of the squad. I want to be used. So that's why it was really painful in the Champions League. Basically, it was the hardest one. You know, I haven't lost the World Cup with France, but this one was more painful because I knew I could help, like being part of this victory way more than I was on the bench, even on the bench. I was in the stand because of the injury again. That was the hardest feeling, emotion that I ever had.
Yeah.
I'm talking about football, of course. It was horrible. I mean, like, horrible because...
Well, it's the pinnacle of any player's career, isn't it? The Champions League final.
Yeah. Yes.
Club career, obviously.
I would say, if you ask anybody, yes, the World Cup is huge, but I will think Champions League is harder to win. For me, if you are obviously playing with a smaller nation that never won it, you have absolutely no chance, I will say. But the Champions League will be the same. If you are a very, very, very small club, you have absolutely no chance. But the Champions League is longer, is harder. It's like there is like so many barriers to win this competition. No. Believe me, you work all the year for this. You wait all the year for that. And then you sit on the stand. No, it's absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. So I was really down and asked to leave. So I say, I can't sustain this no more.
Bloody hell. Just a quick more on that United side. The whole squad was vintage, wasn't it? Rio, your Vidic, your Scholes, obviously won the Champions League. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal side. What squad was better, that United team or the French team that you made the World Cup final with? I mean, with Vieira, Thuram, Makelele, Zidane, Henri, Ribéry, I could go on. You must be pinching yourself playing alongside these players. Which squad was better for you?
No, I'm sorry, but United is great squad, but French, I mean, like, is sick. It was sick. I was like, it's different as well, because when you play a national team, you seems to have like, I was in an era where I had 10 captains in the side. You know, people who are captain in their club, like playing regular, it's one thing, but playing and being the leader of their like team, you know, whether it's like Juventus or Real Madrid and all that, you know, it's like, whoa, no, the squad for France, it was absolutely sick. With all the respect I have for United, because you mentioned like big player, but it seems like we still have like different ages. Like the national team back in the days, they were like at least plus 27 in some way, you know, like I'm saying, like Zidane, Thuram, like all those players were at the pinnacle of their career, you know, like they almost retired after, if not retired. So this is different. I would think that French squad was very scary. It's almost impossible to compare teams. It's almost impossible because we have this connection made by the thousand of training sessions that we have with United. So the game is like, as we know each other very well. We're friends, you always have like a kind of like to reset again, you know. You have to adapt a bit, you're not playing in the same position maybe, so it's a bit different. So sometimes, even if you are very, very experienced, it's just not the same, you know. It's a bit of where it's hard to compare, but I was really impressed by the squad that we had with United, but yeah, France was, sick.
Next level. Yeah. There was absolutely no sitting on the fence from you with that one. It was straight in.
it was crazy.
You mentioned you asked to leave United. When you do leave a club like United, it's only going to be more often than not a step down. I mean, no disrespect to Everton, of course, but I was thinking, was it they weren't renewing your contract, or were you surplus to requirements because you're injured all the time? But you're saying you chose to leave.
Yes, in some way, yes. You can you can ask a player to leave. Obviously, the manager came and say, I think it would be nice if you consider because we want to have a player who is able to play 30 games a season, and it's been proved now that you're not able to do that. So I would say, yeah, of course, I want to go. And that's my decision was already taken in some ways with the respect of Sir Alex Ferguson, and what he provided me as a platform was amazing. But I knew it was just emotionally, I was drained. I was drained. I was like, you know, when a manager is telling you that he's trusting that you're going to be a big asset to win the Champions League because you hurt Chelsea so much every time you play, and you're not able to do that, you feel like there is a kind of black cat element, or, you know, you feel like you lose the faith that has built you. So I was saying, hang on a minute, no. I want so much good for United that I don't want to be there. So it was that bad, you know. It was just at the moment of my career where I just didn't want to feel this pressure, this responsibility, and to let down my teammates. I was just like on the, I was devastated. And that's why I think I naturally, this opportunity came. And I'm not saying like a step down. I think it was an evolution because I had to challenge myself because Everton style was not my style at first. They were like very, let's say, hardworking teams with David Moyes. Obviously, you could see them like everybody was running everywhere. Like it was a different style. I really say, oh, this is a great challenge. I can really help them. I love the project, and I think it was an evolution from my career. So I was 29 or something like this, almost 30 years old. So I felt like I felt it was the right time. What I'd done for United was great, but I couldn't see myself like giving more or better. So I felt like it was the right time.
And obviously at Everton, there'll be more chances of game time as well if you were fit, I suppose, wouldn't there? But the injury problems continued at Everton, didn't they? Whenever you were fit, you were scoring goals, and you did really well at Everton at times. Fastest FA Cup goal, final goal at the time. That was obviously one of your career highs, I would imagine. And then I remember you went to Spurs as well, and I thought you did quite well at Spurs. And then you've gone to Sunderland before a short spell in Serie A with Lazio. When was it when you started to consider retirement?
To be totally honest, when you start to have the, you know, let's say the big injuries that I had, so 27, so my second injury, so I had my meniscus gone, but basically the surgeon told me that I need to break my leg. So it's a name of operation that I won't name because I won't say it correctly. But basically it was to straighten my legs. You know, this was an in-career injury for me. If you do that, I'm done, you know. Mm-hmm. So from that point, I was like thinking about that. I was saying, maybe for me, it's done. So I think I was like 27, 20, 28. I realized that the clock is ticking. I am not going to be there for long. So, you know, when I look back and I say I managed to get this career, 35 years old, I finished, and I can still play, but not at the highest level. So proposition came to go to Italy towards the end, but I was like already wanted to finish. I could have gone to China, to US, or even to Turkey. So all this was like, okay, I can still do it, but my mojo, let's say, left me. I didn't want to suffer anymore. My knees were gone. My Achilles were gone. It's, you know, when you feel like you're not playing as good, it was really hard mentally. And if I had no injuries, I would have maybe finished my career at 40 because I loved the game, but I was too much in pain. So I had to go.
Yeah, I mean, I broke my knee in 2004, 20 years ago, in a football match. And my knee's all screwed together, and it's never been the same since. And I still have issues with it now, even just like fluid build-up, stiffness, like always giving me issues, and it affects my quality of life. And you mentioned at the start of this chat, you've recently had another operation. How How are your knees and your fitness and your health these days, given that you've recently had another op?
Really bad. Really bad, because it's just not just an injury where you know, you're not playing your game and all that. And I am trying to like jog or play with my friends or just enjoy life in some way. And I still can't do it because of my professional career. So mentally, it's extremely hard, especially if I've got my partner. She loves sports. She's always outside and trying to run or do something, and I can't join. It's really hard. So mentally, I'm really down some days when I can't do my stuff that I really like. Doing sport is very important to me. I'm a competitor. I can't win. So I used to beat my son, who is 21 now, at basketball. I can't dunk. I can't do nothing. So it's really hard. My son is playing football. I can't even like really train him as much as I want. It's really hard. Believe me. The only downside of say, oh yes, it's just an injury, is that at today I feel extremely frustrated with maybe some of the choices I made, because I see my fitness now. It's really hard some days. Some days I feel very down, and it's not easy. But again, I'm privileged, so this stay in my blood for a couple of hours, and you see me smiling again. So it's a power to be a West Indies. Where West Indies mentality, you kind of relax and say, okay, life is okay. I see the sun, I see my family, I see the joy in them. So that's fine. I'm not that selfish where it's all about me. But sometimes I would love to, you know, to be, let's say, fit enough. I just had a call from Michael Silvest, who had a game in West Indies where he wanted me to join with other players and all that. I can't do it. And I'm gutted. So hopefully things may change, but for now it's been very frustrated few months.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, best of luck with the recovery, and hopefully we'll be able to go and play with Silvestro again soon. Given your resilience and all the mental strength and the dealing with the adversity that you've gone through for your career, with all the setbacks and everything, and the drive that you've shown over the years to get back out on the pitch despite all these setbacks, looking back now, have you got some words of wisdom that can help athletes, but non-athletes as well, who are going through something similar? And I don't mean just with an injury. I mean just constant setbacks. What advice would you give them?
The advice is very simple. So the first is, like, you have to really, like, be authentic with yourself and identify your strength and your weaknesses and try to improve them. Let's say improve 80% of your strength and 20% of your weaknesses. Be authentic is because there is like so much tendency for managers, agent, whoever, people around you to make you go into a format. Like, oh yes, you have to look like him, or to be this, you have to treat those guys. No. You have to be yourself. You have to be different than others. You have to enjoy being different. And this is where I will say that it's very, very important, because I am not such a big fan of the football now because of that. It's really important that you find your balance. And what I say is, like, yes, as like everything, you have to work hard. You have to really identify working hard as the biggest chance for success. This is simple as that. So if you really want to have that fulfillment, you really need to work out, to be out of your comfort zone. So that's the hardest thing, and for that you have to obviously enjoy what you're doing. So how to do that? You have to enjoy be yourself, you know, in working out. It's absolutely crazy, but that's the thing. You have to enjoy yourself, but to be yourself in working out. That's my advice.
It's good advice. Louis, appreciate you taking the time today. I've loved speaking with you. It's been very insightful, and I really appreciate you taking the extra half an hour that I've had with you. So thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to like, share, comment and subscribe. Follow Hustle Hard the podcast on Instagram. And if you have any suggestions on how you think I can improve the show or who you think I should be interviewing, then please drop me an email at ash.hustlehard@gmail.com. Nice one.